Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Diversion of the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. And remember to click that subscribe button, everybody. An amazing show for you, because board of the mothership is Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. They are now the writers of a new Star Trek series from IDW Publishing. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Jackson and Colin. Thank you so much for coming to Traversing the Stars podcast.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Totally my pleasure. I'm a fan of both of yours, so it's great to talk.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
So I always start off with a question of inspiration. So what inspired your love of comic books, and who were your earliest influences?
Inspired love of comic books. It's actually, I guess, for me, it was mostly kind of the media, right? Media saturation kind of led from cartoons and the animated series of things to the comic book world. I didn't really have anyone in my life who was naturally pushing me there, but I needed to know the history of these characters that I was finding out so much about, which led me to my local library, which then led me to reading everything possibly I could get my hands on. And I guess my uncle, my beloved church-going pastor of an uncle, occasionally asking me and telling me about this thing called Batman and this guy Azrael, who wasn't exactly like an angel, but was kind of cool and superhero-y, and I just thought was the neatest idea. And so he kind of like put that weird brain worm into my head that led me hunting for all sorts of content. Like a river in a dry creek bed. I just found my natural way. As my cat
gonna say. Okay.
I had a very different path insofar as my parents did read comics. My mom was a big Sandman fan, like really loved Neil Gaiman. So we had Sandman and Books of Magic and a couple of other things like that in our home library. So I would, while I read mostly prose, I read a lot of like science fiction and fantasy prose that I had been left by a friend. I got into comics initially through stuff that was probably a bit too old for me in terms of like those early Vertigo books.
Yeah.
And then sort of went away from it for a very long time. And then like Colin, media saturation kind of brought me back around to it after X-Men 2. I was like, I want to know what's up with an X-Men. And I started reading X-Men not long afterwards. And then that cycled me into the Marvel universe, which cycled me into the DC universe, which cycled me into all comics. And then pretty soon I was just, made of comic books.
I think that's awesome. And it's great that media brought you back into comic books. So sometimes it's a debate on whether or not they helped the comic book industry or they don't.
Right.
I argue that they do. I think even 100%. They only bring like five people to the comic book store, that's five better than there was going to be before.
They definitely bring people to the comic book store. I think maybe less and less, but I don't know that. I'd be interested in the numbers on that, but in my experience, it's been nothing but helpful.
Yeah,
it would be my opinion that they're like big billboards for comic books.
Exactly.
They should even give a comic book when you buy a ticket to these movies.
I wish there was more of that. I think there should be trailers for the books. I think that I saw recently they did a the Black Adam books that they did. They actually took a bunch of old Black Adam trades and redid the outside of them. So now it was, you know, The Rock on the cover of this old trade. But that's amazing for a new reader who is just going into the store and is trying to find a JSA book and doesn't really know where to start. Well, that one's got The Rock on it. I know that's going to be the kind of story that attaches to the story that I just watched. So maybe I'll watch that. But they were like giving them out at the premiere and stuff. Like,
really?
They're like genuinely like going out of their way to try to turn people onto the comics on that movie. So regardless of Black Adam, I'm kind of in its corner because like I like the idea of trying to get more people into these books and help enhance the books on the other side of it.
And I agree 100% because I think even if the argument that I've heard is that comics are such a small percentage of what the movies make, but still that is a base that hangs on to these comic books, and that's where your ideas are generated from anyway. So that's where you want the base to get sucked into.
Yes, these are the longevity, and it's really important I think to recognize that they are going to be the MCU is burning through plot very fast. It's going to run out of material in terms of like forward material for a lot of these characters pretty quickly without finding a way to move them forward in either original ways, which is I think kind of what they're doing right now, or eventually adaptive ways, which they're going to have to do based on the stuff that's happening now. So I think these things are not in competition, and they shouldn't be in competition. They are allies, which is actually a big part of what we're doing on Star Trek, is like trying to reframe the comics not as subsidiary, but as an ally to what the film and television side is doing.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic. So to go right to what you're doing on Star Trek, you guys are both co-writing a new Star Trek ongoing, but it's not just a new ongoing. It's literally a new universe that you're creating. You're basically creating 6 points. It was like Marvel 616, a 617 for a Star Trek kind of thing.
I'd argue that we're operating entirely in the 616. If Star Trek has a core universe, we are in that core universe. What we're doing is building out a space in that universe that doesn't currently exist.
Okay. Can you go into more detail on that, you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. So one of our big important things for this was to kind of approach this like Marvel does approach the Marvel, like the Avengers, right? We wanted to find a story where we could take people with touch points across the entire Trek spectrum and bring together in one book, but not through the magic of time travel or mirrorverse, multiverse kind of dimension hopping. No, this all takes place directly between Voyager and Nemesis. We are in the years right around 2378. There is a sweet spot where there is no real established continuity for the Federation, for the Alpha or Beta quadrants. So by telling a story specifically in that little section, we are able to bring these characters together and tell a story unlike anything Star Trek's ever seen. But yes, exactly, within the continuity of the stories. This isn't a multiverse.
And so ideally, as things develop out in the current television, right, while we are obviously using characters from TOS, TNG, DS9, Voyager, we are going to have connective tissue to and connective tissue to Enterprise, although obviously we have hundreds of years between those things. So it's not like we can take a character from Enterprise and port them over here. But we have, you know, we have legacy characters that we can and names that we can pop in. But as the new shows, as Discovery and Strange New Worlds and Prodigy and Lower Decks all form their way forward, we're also looking for ways to build connective tissue to those, because all of this stuff exists all in the same continuity. Star Trek has only ever like diverted universes a couple of times, with the Mirror Universe, with Yesterday's Enterprise, and with the Prime universe with the 2009 sort of Kelvin universe. Other than that, the Prime Universe is the Prime Universe is the Prime Universe. Like, Star Trek is Star Trek, and we really want this to feel like core canon. In fact, it is core canon. Like, we are working with the other shows, we are working inside the established continuity, and we're trying to make sure that this highlights, respects, and enhances those in the same way that they are, by their very nature of existing, enhancing what we're doing.
So, interestingly, you said there's the window. I think you said the last episode of Deep Space Nine and Voyager said there's this window.
Yeah.
So, for the readers, how big or how many years is this window that you're working within, and how tight is it to keep within that window so whatever you do must fit?
About 1.5 to 2 years right now.
Okay.
In terms of the window that we have to tell story in this particular context. Now, I want to stress this context because we may stretch outside of those 2 years, right? That's just where we're starting. This is an ongoing series. It's designed for longevity. So maybe we'll get and connect up to Nemesis and that'll be the end of our run. Maybe we'll get to the end of Nemesis and pop forward a few years and operate in continuity that by that point has been established by Lower Decks, right? Who knows where this can go? What we needed to do was start a framework by which everyone could get used to this operating. And that's where this comes from.
And we all know the power of comics. Like, how many years have passed in X-Men? Like, who can say?
Right.
So, yes, mechanically, we have about 18 months to play with. But in terms of how many stories we can tell within that space, I mean, it's infinite. But the point always being that, like, we want to maintain those touchstones and those characters that people are going to fall in love with.
Now, the one interesting thing about Star Trek and Star Trek fans is, almost like Marvel fans, they're continuity crazy.
Of course.
Right. So the question that always happens, and it kind of was answered a little bit when Star Wars made their EU books, but Star Trek and their books never quite answer it. How canon is the comic going to be within the actual TV verse? Are they in communication? Are they you guys going back and forth going, this is what we did so they don't step on your toes? Or is it sort of like the books, you know, the Star Trek books that don't ever
100%. Yeah. And in fact, the Star Trek books through CODA, everything that Dayton Ward and his team were doing up until very recently, they had to wrap that entire universe. They literally had to do like a universal event where that universe sacrificed itself so that the core universe could live, right? That had to be acknowledged as a split continuity with the advent of Star Trek Picard and the way that that pushed the story forward. We are in a different scenario than they were. And in fact, Dayton is working with us. Like we're the people who did that are working now on the Star Trek side to maintain and make sure that that doesn't have to happen again. We are operating in a core continuity now. So I don't want it to make it sound like we are talking to the showrunners and telling them what we're doing so they don't do what we're going to do. That's a beautiful dream, but that's never going to happen with comic books. Comic books are a subservient medium in this regard. Like they are not going to take their marching orders from us. What we have to do is find ways to step through the raindrops. And as long as we are aware of the raindrops, which is what we are, right? We are fundamentally aware of what happens in Picard season three, of what happens. I mean, we're good friends with Mike McMahon, so we know what's up with Lower Decks season three. We know what's on the, we have friends on Strange New Worlds. We have friends on Prodigy. We have an understanding of where this stuff is going. And we get to work with them without getting in their way ever, because we would never dream of getting in their way. They are Star Trek television. Like, they're not going to take their orders from us. But what they are going to do is listen to us and help us understand what we need to maintain continuity with what they're doing. And so with the acknowledgement that we aren't ever going to be steering that ship, what we're trying to do, and that's why 2378 was so important, by the way, that's why that 18-month window is so cool, is we're trying to, with the experience of having done this for a little while, and knowing how to operate licensed books and how to walk through those raindrops a little bit, we're learning how to then say, okay, great, this is what you're doing. All good. Here's how we're going to turn that into functional story that doesn't break anything, that instead maintains, makes things interesting, keeps things going. It keeps the whole universe feeling fundamentally consistent so that, for instance, a really good example of this is Lore is showing up on Defiant, right? Star Trek Defiant, which is a split-off book that we're going to be doing, Lore's on the cover. He's in our core cast. So we know he's going to be there. The Star Trek fan base now also knows that Lore is going to be on Picard season three. All of our conversations are, how do we make sure that as Lore operates in Picard season three, that we aren't doing anything that's going to be redundant there, so that Star Trek fans are getting this, the same story twice. And also that whatever they're doing there, we are properly setting up back here. So yeah, we're in the past and we're kind of writing what happened before, but in large part, we are operating with the knowledge of where it's going so that we can make that connective tissue. And that's kind of happening across the line right now.
So once again, to go back to that 18-month window that you have.
Yeah. And just to answer your question really, really fundamentally, these books are canon, period.
All right. Perfect. I do think that's always the concern, especially with the comic books and the books in the Star Trek world, where there's so many of them, and there's no way the people who are writing the Star Trek shows are paying attention to the 40, 50, 60 books that are out there.
It wouldn't be fair to the television shows to make our stuff required reading. And nor is it fair for them to be required reading for us. And I think that's the other side of this, is like, we're trying to make books that a new fan can pick up. I want somebody who doesn't know Star Trek to be able to pick up this book and learn all the great stuff that exists in the Star Trek universe that is so fundamental to us, the stuff that brought us in. And that's where the sort of, to what Colin was speaking to like the Avengers level construction of the book, the thinking of it as a living universe, that's where that comes from, is a hope that we can engage you, whether or not you like Sisko or Data or Paris or these new characters that we're introducing, or you just like the starship, or you just like this idea, that you can find the thing you like in there.
You know, I must admit, I actually, when I was reading the preview of it, I thought you were creating a separate universe. So I think that's fantastic. No, this is just a in continuity canon comic book. Now, the question that I'm going to hammer you guys on just a little bit, because once again, continuity matters. The 18 months. So because it's a comic book, that's a monthly comic book that, you know, at the moment exists in some sort of time frame. So what is the time frame we're looking at between comic book and real Star Trek? I mean, are we talking a year of comic books is 3 months in comic book world? Is it like, how does that function?
Yeah, it's not going to be a, yeah, it's not going to be a one-to-one kind of tracking system like that. You know, like some Star Trek episodes take 100 years. Some of them are over in a blink. So, you know, we're going to tell as many stories as we want within that space. Unlike, say, our year five book, which was very much about, you know, there is 1 year. We are telling two years of comics that cover 1 year of Star Trek's life. This is the fifth year of the Enterprise's five-year mission, right? That had a very clear timeline. And we really knew like, okay, well, here's roughly how long this is all going to take. Right. We are not burdening ourselves or locking us into that kind of box with this because the story is going to get so exciting and so strange and so weird. We don't really want to. Yeah, we don't want to lock it down.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that, like, remember Year of Hell? Like the Voyager bit where suddenly they're doing a full year. It's like that, like, but kind of in reverse. Right. We're going to have arcs that take place over the course of a couple of days. And we're going to have episodes that take place over a couple of weeks, and we will scale at that time. But here's the thing. We do have the star dates, and the books have the star dates in them. So, okay. if you're a nerd and you're really getting in on it, like we would, like there are, I'm pretty sure the star dates are actually like literally on the data pages. Like you can see them in each book. I don't quote me on that. I could be wrong about that. It could just be like a design thing that I haven't cut yet, but we call out star dates and we keep track of those star dates. And we make sure that we know what we're leveling to and we know where we're leveling from. So hopefully over the course of those star dates, you'll be able to track exactly how much time has passed over the course of Star Trek.
Well, I think that's a relief to the fans of Star Trek. Like I said, continuity matters for them. So I guess.
And for us.
Right. Yeah, so I guess, go ahead.
That's also just something to keep in mind. Like, oh, the fans, continuity matters. Like my guy, we are fans. We are fans first and foremost. We grew up on Star Trek. Star Trek was our babysitter. Star Trek was our parent, right? Like this stuff is in our blood and we're those same, like we can all nod and smile at continuity when it comes to the Marvel universe or the DC universe. Like we get it, guys. You're trying your best. Continuity matters in Star Trek. It's one of the first and perhaps still the largest intersecting shared universe of any media franchise. And if you don't respect that, then you're not respecting the core of what the adult show, what the fuck this thing is actually meant to be. Right. Yeah. So it's like, just so anyone listening, so you know, like this is our jam, and having it link in like clockwork with everything else within the Star Wars. Oh my God. Star Trek universe is insanely important for us.
And this isn't a job that we like came to because like we needed the money, you know, like this is a job we came to because we needed the job. Like we came to them with, please let us do more Star Trek. We came off of year five, which was us already coming in and being like, guys, we want to do Star Trek. Like this was a 5-year process for us of going in and showing them our credentials and going in and trying to share our passion and going in and talking about these new stories. Like we just did this out of a sheer love for Star Trek. And then it happened to finally coalesce into this like beautiful new line of books.
Well, I'm glad you guys said that. My next question was, how big of nerds actually are you? But I think you've answered my question quite well on that. So the two books where you guys are launching with, we got Star Trek and then Star Trek Defiant.
Yeah.
So are you able to reveal what the crews are going to look like in these two books?
Oh yeah.
Okay. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. We, there's still some secrets, but we can tell you most of it.
Okay. Go for it.
Yeah. So, our core book, which is just called Star Trek, which yes, is very confusing because it's Star Trek, but it's Star Trek. This is going to be the story primarily revolving around the return of certainly our favorite captain, Benjamin Sisko. He is coming out of the wormhole, as we always know he was supposed to and must. And he's coming out having returned to his corporeal form with a mission, with a message that he is slowly forgetting as he returns to being mortal. But the prophets have told him that someone is killing gods. And it's up to him to find out what is happening and how to stop it.
And in this case, obviously gods, just to trigger this for Star Trek fans, because I know that there are some, especially when we first pitched it, who were like, gods, let me be really clear about this because it's a unique use of the word. When we sat down to start pitching this book, we had a deep conversation about what it meant for Star Trek to be, Star Trek, like, cause we knew the book was just going to be called Star Trek. So we're like, we want it to be representative of stuff that is specific to Star Trek. And one of the things that Star Trek has that almost no other science fiction franchise has, with the notable exception, I think, of Babylon 5. But Babylon 5 kind of does it very differently, is the idea of Kardashev civilizations, like type 3 and type 4 civilizations, interacting with effectively type 1 and type 2 civilizations. Like the idea that we are very advanced, that the Federation is very advanced, that it has the, you know, hundreds of interstellar planets and has the Starfleet and has governance, and they've moved past scarcity and all these things. And that even there, we are still effectively children, because there are species like the Q and like the crystalline entities and like the Borg and like the Trelane and like the list goes on. The Organians, the list goes on.
Literal Apollo,
right? Like actual gods. And some of them call themselves gods and some of them don't. The prophets, obviously. But in large part, Star Trek has a lot of these, like space gods, quote unquote, is a big idea in Star Trek. And so when we built the story around them, we knew it was because it was a story you could only tell in Star Trek. So I understand people being like, it's just Gore the God Butcher. And I'm telling you, it's not. Like Gore the God Butcher is like literal Apollo. We're not really doing that. Like on a much more like science fiction basis, and functions a little differently than something.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
Unfortunately, someone is killing Kardashev level 3 civilizations doesn't quite have the same sexy ring to it.
Yeah, it's not a good pitch for some reason. I don't know why. Pitch. So Sisko's in the captaincy because that's where our target is, and who has more to gain or lose out of that scenario than Benjamin Sisko.
So in Picard season 2, they introduced the idea that the Qs are dying. Does this connect to what you guys are doing now?
To some degree, yes. What I'll say is that, again, we take our orders from them, not the other way around. So it's not like we pitched and then Terry Natalis was like, ooh, I've got a really good idea to like, so, no, Terry did that. That's awesome. It was very interesting. How we can set that up, definitely on our minds. Suffice to say, I think they've shown the cover to issue 3 and Q's on it. So suffice to say, we'll be connecting to Q very quickly.
But one of the cool things there that is really neat, that is just one of the beautiful things about Picard season 2, is it shows the fundamental humanity of Q, and the fact that like Qs can get scared. Qs are like, yes, they are gods, but they're just like us, which I think is really one of the great things about exploring it, is what makes a god is like technical power level, right? Is about energy consumption, not about heart. And I think that's going to be really something interesting as we start to unpack it further on with our story.
1,000%.
But even as Sisko is there with this kind of brand new mission, which, yes, is a little terrifying to Starfleet, who likes things very direct and clean and operational. Of course, if he is going to be able to get get empowered for this mission, which he will, because he does need a starship, the compromise is he needs a first officer who will really keep his feet on the ground, keep him focused, and keep him on mission. And there is no one better than that than our very favorite positronic cyborg, Data himself.
Data is, he is an android, sir. You said it and you knew I was gonna, I'm sorry, thanks. I can't, they do it on the show, what am I gonna do? With Data in first officer, we wanted to put somebody in the second officer seat who was gonna really push a different button out of Sisko, but also somebody who he wasn't familiar with. We felt it was really important to not surround Sisko with DS9 characters and rather surround him with the larger Star Trek universe as to push him into new avenues. So on his first side, he's got Data. Data's getting his first shot at first officer after all this time watching Riker. On the other side of him, he's got Dr. Beverly Crusher, who's kind of getting out of sick bay and is getting a chance to actually like step into a little bit more of a command role. This does tie into Picard season 3, I think, in a sort of direct way. But this is also a really great way for us to reflect something specific about Beverly Crusher that we feel doesn't get enough like of a spotlight, which is that she's kind of a mad scientist. Like she's really the thing that seems to excite her most is like an inescapable medical problem, like more than any other doctor other than maybe like Phlox. Like she really has this experimental nature to her, and we thought, what bigger medical mystery is there in Starfleet as a operation than Benjamin Sisko at this point, having come back from the wormhole? So those are our three in the sort of like command chairs. Sisko, Data, Beverly.
And plus she has a little bit of something to say about mortals who then ascend to become godlike beings.
Yeah, she's got a little bit of a personal stake.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that brings up two questions I got hit on. First, this may take a shot at my nerd cred, but I'm just gonna ask the question. From my knowledge of Star Trek Nemesis and what they said in Picard, Data is dead.
Correct.
How did we solve the dead Data problem?
We're 2378, man. 2380. Oh. 2380 is when Data dies. This happens before. We are, when I tell you that 2378 is the key to this whole book, we mean it. It's the reason that we picked this is because Voyager is back. DS9 is over and the Dominion War is done, but it's been 3 years and we have no idea what the galaxy looks like after the Dominion War 3 years later. That's a really interesting time to pick up the galaxy. We don't know that that exists. DS9's done. Voyager's back, so all the Voyager characters are on the table and all the TNG characters are still alive and the Enterprise E is still running. The Romulan Star Empire has not fallen into chaos. Like, the Hoba supernova hasn't happened yet, so Spock is still around. Like, all of this stuff was us looking at a very specific period in history and saying, this is when the most toys are on the table.
Gotcha.
And they're toys that you can't film anymore because the actors have all aged out.
So you also mentioned the stakes for Beverly Crusher, and we got a certain son, and we might want to bring up what that came up as well in the end of Picard season 2.
Yep.
So he's a character?
We are neither confirming nor denying the activities of Wesley Crusher over the course of our book. What I will say is he is not a member of our core cast.
Okay. Yeah. Now, not much of this.
But Will's a friend and I love him. Hi, Will.
Who was a guest of the show. So hi to him.
Oh, great.
He gave me my beer fridge.
Oh, really? He really is a cool guy. Like that.
He's a very cool dude.
I'm surprised he gave me time to talk with him. I was like, oh shit. Okay.
he's a genuinely cool guy.
Yeah. So the other question, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but it was in the preview that I saw Gary Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, you're talking about gods, you're talking about danger. Is this a spoiler to mention that he is introduced? It sounds like at the very beginning of the very first issue.
He is introduced in Star Trek 400, which is a short, it was an anniversary issue. It was the 400th issue of IDW Star Trek, which is a pretty big thing for a licensed book. We wanted to showcase, we had 8 pages to showcase what it meant to kill a god in the Star Trek universe. So that was Star Trek 400, which was the 400th book on the Star Trek license, which is kind of a big deal for a licensed book like that. And we knew we wanted to use it to help tease what Star Trek was going to be. And so as we talked about that, we sort of figured, look, we don't want to blow Sisko coming out of the wormhole. We don't want to blow the team coming together. We don't want to show the Theseus too early. Like, all the stuff that we're trying to do, we want to do in issue 1, because we want issue 1 to be a perfect jumping on point, even if you haven't read this prequel. But we thought the prequel could be a nice promise to Star Trek fans about what it meant to say that somebody was killing gods. And to go back to the very first Star Trek villain, the Talosians notwithstanding, to go back to the very first Star Trek villain and say, what does it mean for this man who became a god, who has ascended and who has seen what the Federation can be, who's seen what Starfleet can be? What does it mean for him to die? What does it mean for something to kill him and for him to face that directly? And that's where Star Trek 400 came from. So Gary Mitchell, I think comfortably say, will not be in our book because he is dead.
Okay, fair enough. So how far along are we plotted in the Star Trek comic book? And do we already know that beyond the 2 titles, we're going to be splitting off into more titles?
So we are planning up through so far. We're actually really excited and thrilled. We're planning through our first line-wide event right now, which
cannot say anything about and doesn't technically exist.
Then we are excited about the future that might be happening. You know, it's crazy how sometimes when there's 2 comic books that are kind of exist side by side, sometimes, I don't know, they just kind of like cross over into some kind of wild thing. Maybe something like that.
Will there be additional wild things then by that point of the event?
We will see. Here's what I'll say. We just announced Defiant less than a week ago, right? It's brand new information. I'm going to let everybody soak in that for a second. Like, Chris Cantwell, Iron Man, Halt and Catch Fire, he's coming over to play in Star Trek with us. He's bringing his Iron Man collaborator, Angel, and they're going to make like Dirty Dozen for the Star Trek universe. We threw down that challenge at Chris and he took it up and just ran with it. That's really exciting stuff. I want these two books to live and last and work. So we're not going to rush this line. I think it would be a real mistake to try to put like 8 Star Trek books out right away. Do we want to put 8 Star Trek books out? 100%, right? But whether or not we get to that stage is a question of, do people show up? Are people excited? Do we do our jobs and keep the fans engaged? Are people excited about the distinction in tone and art between Defiant and Star Trek and see how this line can work as wide as the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe, the Valiant Universe, or any of these other like large scale comics universes? If all of those things get checked, then I think sky's the limit for this line. If they don't, then this is a noble experiment in trying something that, you know, didn't work. But I very much hope that we live in the former timeline than the latter timeline, given how much of a dream gig this is for us.
So one final question, and then I can let you guys go. So obviously, one thing that's been brought up in the Star Trek continuity that's become an issue in the world of comic book nerds is the Klingons of Discovery and Worf himself not obviously being that. Is that something that's addressed in this story? Do you have Klingons, and are they the ones that we know, or is it this Discovery new Klingon?
Sure, this is a complicated question. What we can say is, like, it's obvious now, Worf is in our cast, and he's not a different Worf. He looks like Worf. Most of the Klingons you will see in our stories, they look like the Klingons we know and love. I think especially, though, you can even see in Discovery the kind of course corrections they were making between season 1 and season 2. Like, I know even Discovery was kind of finding its feet in terms of how things looked. What I personally will always go to bat for is that the aesthetics of the Klingons in Discovery rip. They are so great. The armor, the look, the all of the stuff that is like that says an imperial culture with a deep warrior history is amazing and so great compared to what we're getting out of traditional Trek, which is, you know, a gray jumpsuit, which we love a good gray jacket, but give me gilding, give me silk, give me embroidery, right? That opulence. And that is definitely something we are bringing into our Trek, our take on the Klingons.
I think it's safe to say that the nice thing about Discovery is that it takes place time locked away from the Klingons that we know, right? And we know how Enterprise looks. And so, you know, obviously it's hard to like build that entirely in your head about like, how do they go from looking like this to looking like this to looking like this to TOS to TNG? Okay. It's Klingons, and the redesign of them has been a complicated question since Star Trek Immemorial. So we're not going to solve that in a comic book. What we're going to do is play it all straight. I'm not going to go about trying to like, Enterprise did a really good job, I think, of trying to square some of those circles.
It's so funny.
We're not out here trying to square circles. What we're trying to do is tell new stories and push it forward. These are not comics for Star. Like, I don't want to say that. These are comics for everyone, not just fans of Star Trek. So if you're a fan of Star Trek, you're going to find new stories with your favorite characters, driving them into new interesting places, to new strange new worlds and new civilizations. And also, it's also on the other side, this Dirty Dozen book where like Lore and Ro Loren and like Worf and Spock all team up to go do illegal shit, right? Like we're making a line here that can be fun and cool and engaging without relying on having to be like, this is the one where we explain Klingons, right? That's not the point.
Yeah.
That said, I do want to kind of go to bat for Discovery on this for a second, because the Discovery Klingons are not that different than the Klingons that we've seen exterior to them. They just don't have hair. and I like to think that Discovery takes place, and specifically T'Kuvma's kind of cult and his period as a leader of Klingons. And I love T'Kuvma. This show that this new thing we're doing, Star Trek, it might show you our version of T'Kuvma a little bit, because like I really like T'Kuvma and have been into that premise of like Klingon warrior poet king for like a very long time. I think it's a great premise. We wrote a K-Less one shot that was all about this. Like, I love Klingons as sword anime. But on the other side of that, I feel like all of his, like, in continuity, I feel like all of his followers just shaved their heads. I feel like there was like a period where like Klingons were like taking things that like made them bald. And then, and it was like, a religious ceremony and they all did that. And then after, Laurel and after all the like mother stuff, and once they went through the xenophage, they kind of came out the other side and were like, maybe we should have hair again or grow beards. And then like, once you grow beards and have hair, they basically look like Discovery Klingons. It's just Discovery Klingons. You can see the whole head. I think that's really all it is. That's my
that's a great point.
That's the way my head does it.
Well, because we know like first season Sisko, not powerful until he got the goatee, right? Like Riker, completely powerless until he grew the beard. Yep. Same with Klingons. You take a Klingon's hair away, they lose all their juice. You got to let that big flowing locks get on back, get a good glorious mustache, and then your Klingons are back on track.
I'm telling you, man. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, Jackson, Kyle, it's a great pleasure to talk with you. You guys have given me faith in this comic book series that you're working on. And as comic book Star Trek nerds, I appreciate it.
Back at you, man. Thank you so much, Travis.
We want your friends. We want your friends who have never read Star Trek before. We want to give you the tool that you need to put in their hands and say, look, even though I know you have always thought this was too heavy, too much, too strange, too buttoned up, here's your entry point. Get this taste. It's going to be high octane. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be smart as hell in the classic vein of Trek, when I'm not just tooting our own horns. But it's going to give you the tools you need to get your friends as excited about Star Trek as you have always been.
Well, when it's time for the big event, come right back and let's nerd out about that as well.
Oh, sounds my great. God.
Have a great night, guys.
Night, Jeff.